Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Leaning Into the Wind, Andy Goldsworthy, The Young Karl Marx, and The Party. This is just two sentences. It's great.
I know. You could really make a paragraph out of this.
Absolutely.
We even have a sort of a trajectory.
Yes, The Young Karl Marx and The Party. It's all good.
That's right, yeah. Well, The Party does not exactly have that meaning, although it kind of does in that last film. But actually, our trajectory today is from a documentary to a sort of a docudrama to a fiction film. So that's our trajectory. So beginning with Leaning Into the Wind, Andy Goldsworthy, way back in the year 2001, a documentary came out called Rivers and Tides, Andy Goldsworthy Working with Time. It was made by a German filmmaker named Thomas Riedelsheimer, and he has now returned with all these years later, 16 years later, with a second documentary about Andy Goldsworthy, which is our film for today, Leaning Into the Wind, Andy Goldsworthy. And Andy Goldsworthy is a Scottish artist who has worked throughout his entire career with nature. He works in nature, he works with nature. And that first film, Rivers and Tides, dealt primarily with a couple of his sort of obsessions as an artist, which is dealing with water and dealing with rivers basically and streams, but any manifestation really of nature, including very delicate work sometimes where he will put together some icicles into a fascinating shape, attaching one to another as they weave sort of through a tree somewhere out in the middle of a forest somewhere, or sometimes monumental works made out of bricks that will last maybe forever, that kind of thing. So now, again, 16 years later, the same filmmaker has come and made a second film about Andy Goldsworthy, who is about 16 years older, as one might expect, and whose work is pretty much the same. He still deals very much with nature, although he regards kind of everything as nature. He, I think, quite rightly regards even the city, even the urban scene, as part of nature, because after all, even things that were made by human beings, we are part of nature. So he's working in the city, he's working in the country, still primarily out of the city, though, still primarily in the world that we would more commonly call nature. And he is now putting his own body, his own self, into his work more often than he did before, sometimes doing stuff that really moves over into being sort of performance art. So sometimes, yes, he is still making something which might be very ephemeral and might sort of all crumble or fall away in maybe a fairly short period of time. Other times works which will last for a very long time. And then often works again which involve his own body. There will be a work of art which is him walking through the middle of a hedge. or I should say down the length of a hedge. Or there will be a work where he does actually quite a lot of works where he will lie down somewhere, whether it's in the city or in the country, while it's raining, and then he will get up and there is his outline of his body where the rain didn't hit the surface. And that will be a work which will last for a very short time. He does a lot of work with leaves. He will cover one of his hands with red leaves, sometimes helped by his daughter, who is now his assistant. Or he will fill his mouth with some kind of blossoms and then expel them all into the air in this sort of glorious burst, and this will be a work of art. So again, one of the most interesting things about his art, I think, is that there's just all these different sorts of time spans involved. Some of his things, again, which are made out of enduring materials, will be around for a very long time. Other things are around for just a few moments or even just a fleeting moment. So very, very interesting stuff. And that is what this documentary deals with. And of course, by putting all of this stuff on, by putting it onto high def video, the time span is being changed yet again in that way. And there's a little bit of stuff which we see in slow motion, where something which maybe only lasted for a few seconds in real life will last for maybe, you know, more than a few seconds when we see it in slow motion. So it's a very, very interesting and beautiful documentary, as was the first film, which is pretty readily available, too, if people want to check it out. Andy Goldsworthy is a very unusual artist. In the first film, Rivers and Tides, there is somebody quotes the artist Vasily Kandinsky, who once, I think it was him, maybe it was somebody else, who said, yes, it was some other artist, but anyway, who said, why would you write about a work of art when you can take a picture of it? So now we have all the resources of film and video, and we can capture these things in even different ways. So again, if you have any interest in art, any interest in modern art, or for that matter, any interest in nature, definitely a documentary to check out. Quite remarkable work. And by the way, Andy Goldsworthy speaks about his work and explains it and discusses his own relationship with it all the way through the film. He's a very engaging narrator, and it's quite a lovely film. So turning from that documentary now to a movie which could be called a kind of a docudrama in a way, The Young Karl Marx. This is made by the Haitian-born filmmaker Raoul Peck, who a couple of years ago made quite a major impact with a movie which he made about the artist James Baldwin, excuse me, the writer, the American writer James Baldwin. The movie was called I Am Not Your Negro. Peck has made quite a number of other films, but that's maybe his best known film, and it was just a couple of years ago. So now he is returning, as he always does pretty much, to the world of politics and the world of political culture and cultural politics by making a movie about, yes, the young Karl Marx. And this is, in fact, about the Karl Marx who we're all familiar with, I guess, and it is about him as a young man. Not starting out, he's already actually quite involved in his career. He's in his middle 20s, but since he didn't live to be a very old age, he obviously had to get started early to have the tremendous impact on politics and on culture and on literature and on economics and on so many other things that he had. So we have here Karl Marx, who is in his middle 20s, and he is married to his wife, Jenny von Westphalen Marx, and they are struggling to keep this movement which he is starting alive. And he's a publisher, and he's a writer, and he's always looking for patronage, and he gets some patronage, and he's meeting up with other young radicals who want to change the world in kind of the same ways that he does. So that is what the movie is about. And of course, we have in the film his meeting with Friedrich Engels, his great partner, and they are very, very different in so many ways. Marx himself is he lives the life of the mind. He lives very much in his ideas, and he is absolutely struggling to have real impact and real effect in the real world, of course. But he is a rough and ready fellow who doesn't much worry about how he impresses other people. Whereas Engels is a very different sort of a character. He is very well groomed. He is very precise. He is very correct. And the two of them make a very interesting complementary pair personality-wise. But they get together and they start working together, and that is a big theme of the film. And then we also have other characters such as the French anarchist Pierre-Joseph Proudhon. And Marx and Engels are not anarchists, but they have a lot of ideas in common with a character like Proudhon. And other people come along, including Engels' lover and eventual wife, Mary Burns. A wonderful cast in the movie. Karl Marx is played by August Diehl, who marvelous performance, and Engels, who is played by Stefan Konarska, and again, it's just a marvelous complementary performance. These two personalities offset each other very well. Interestingly, Marx's wife, Jenny, is played by Vicky Creeps, who also is around right now as one of the real stars, the real co-star, actually, of Phantom Thread, the movie with Daniel Day-Lewis. And she is very, very different in these two films, but she makes a marvelous impact in the young Karl Marx, as does Hannah Steele, who plays Mary Burns. And I also want to mention Olivier Gourmet, a very, very major, very important French actor who plays Proudhon. And various other people are also around in the film. So they go from country to country. There's an exile here. There's a search for funds there. They're always struggling on this stuff. And the movie ends up with the, because it is about the young Karl Marx, ends up with the writing and of the Communist Manifesto. Marx's most famous work is probably Das Kapital, the famous Capital. The writing of that is also involved in the film. The film ends with a text about Marx finally completing Capital, which, as it points out, was never really completed because it was a work that was always in dialogue with the world, and it was more terminated by Marx's death than completed in the sense that we would expect of some sort of a normal literary masterpiece. But the movie actually climaxes and comes to a halt with the writing of the Communist Manifesto. And this is the only place, I think, where the movie goes off the rails just a little bit, because here it becomes almost a worshipful kind of a thing, as if the writing of the Communist Manifesto was something that it had a gigantic, overwhelming impact on the entire 20th century, as well as the later part of the 19th century. But we have here a sort of a mythical cast that the movie goes into, as if the writing of the Communist Manifesto was something that all of history had been building up to, and it wasn't quite that. But most of the way, I found the young Karl Marx just enormously entertaining to watch. It's wonderful the way these characters with their political passions kind of interact with each other, and most of them get along very well. We have a lot of sort of chummy interaction among these young people, which I enjoyed watching very much. So it's a movie that's not going to play in multiplexes, but it's well worth seeking out, the young Karl Marx. It's a very interesting and entertaining movie. And finally, our totally fictional film of the day, The Party, which is the latest movie from Sally Potter, who is a fascinating filmmaker. Her greatest film, I think, made quite a number of years ago, was her adaptation of Virginia Woolf's great novel, Orlando, starring the wonderful Tilda Swinton. And it's a fabulous movie and is well worth seeking out. And I think that it remains Sally Potter's finest film. But she's made quite a lot of other movies, and The Party just happens to be her latest one. There's a kind of a genre of movies that is sort of small-scale movies that deal with parties. Many years ago, another British film, Mike Leigh, made a movie called Abigail's Party. It was originally for TV, but it's quite a marvelous little movie. And just a few years ago, there was Roman Polanski's movie Carnage, which was about a party. And what always happens in these parties is they start out as parties and they're festive, and then everything goes downhill. And that is what happens in Sally Potter's movie, The Party, as well. We have a party which is being held to celebrate a woman who has been, played, by the way, by Kristen Scott Thomas, who has just achieved a fairly important political position. She's become her party's shadow minister for health, and they're hoping that if her party then actually gets into the lead in the British parliamentary system, that she could then be an enormously important figure in the country. And so this party is being held to celebrate her new position. And at the party are her husband, Bill, played by the fabulous Timothy Spall, who's been in many Mike Leigh films, by the way, and who is a crotchety old man. And then others, played by a terrific cast that I just want to name. There is Patricia Clarkson, there is Cherry Jones, there is Emily Mortimer, there is the wonderful German actor Bruno Ganz, who we don't see as often as we should nowadays, but he's terrific in this movie, and Cillian Murphy. So a terrific cast in this very small-scale, very intimate film about these people at this party, which is being held to celebrate a small-scale political, well, not that small-scale, political triumph. And then, yes, as things go along, rivalries develop, secrets come out, and so forth. The movie begins, and this is not a spoiler because it's the very first thing in the movie, with our hostess, Janet, opening the door of the house, and the camera is looking at her through the door, and she suddenly lifts a gun and aims it directly at us, at the camera. And then we go into the past, and we see this turns out to be the end of the party, and we then see all the events of the party that lead up to this. So in a way, the whole movie is a flashback, and we are eventually going to find out why in the world our hostess is opening the door and holding up a gun and saying something, and it looks like she's going to fire directly at us. So that's kind of the little suspense thing built into the movie. But then we see all the events that lead up to this, and this turns out to be a sort of a little zinger, an ironic little capstone on the movie. But what we have along the way is a mixture of comedy and tragedy and all kinds of stuff, all being enacted in this really an apartment in this little London flat, among all these people, some of whom are self-serving, some of whom are sort of nice people, and a whole big psychological mix. So it's a very, very small scale movie in every way. It's only an hour and 11 minutes long, including the credits. And I rather like that. So many movies nowadays last for such a long, long time. Very economical. Again, a small cast, but a marvelously well-chosen one. And I just found the movie captivating from the start to the finish. One of the best movies I have seen this year, and I do recommend it. So that is my somewhat partly fictional, partly documentary, partly in-between story this week, Joe.